Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Leo in London.
I'm Shauna, and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we get to know one another and experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. Here, we'll let people know that autistic therapists exist, to contribute to the evolving neurodiversity dialogue, and with each other to create an engaging and dynamic space. Everyone's welcome. You don't need to be autistic or to be a therapist to join us. We're sure you'll find something of interest and connection here. What do you want to do with this time, as I would normally say to a client?
Hilarious, because I've just looked at the clock and realised that we've talked for 20 minutes and then you're saying, I'm very happy to be here.
And I am.
Been here for 20 minutes. It just would be...
Oh, that's loud. Normal.
I guess I want to find a way to see what comes out. There must be something in me that feels the need to speak, be listened to, and be supported, I guess, to talk about my concerns about certain groups of people hearing the podcast.
Great. I can do that.
Yeah.
So, because what you did... in episode one, it was really lovely. We did a little preamble and then you said, right, Leo, so, and you asked me a question.
That's
and
right.
That kicked it all off. You've done that a number of times, actually, and it's lovely.
Yeah.
And we talked, so this is me doing that now. In the first couple of episodes, we touched on the idea of starting a podcast together and how that came to be and all the benefits that we hope it will bring. And why it will be a nice thing for us to do and enjoy.
Yeah.
What's the worst of it for you? Like, what are the risks or what are the things you worry about or what's on your mind on the shadow side of that when you think about us putting up podcasts together?
I like the way that you asked that. What's the worst of it for me? The concerns for me, the fears for me. I guess it's the unknown of the people that might listen to it who already have an idea of who I am, and that might then be unhelpful for them to get this information that I would be offering and expressing. That level of insight or information into who I am might not be welcome for lots of reasons. So I can think of different sort of groups of people that might be the case for. So I'm thinking about like clients that I worked with several years ago in private practice who were maybe exploring neurodivergence, or it would have been helpful to have known that I was autistic. But it was so new to me at that time that I didn't bring it into the room, because it took me a long time to feel like I had identified and embodied that identity enough to feel like I would be confident to bring it into the room without it being about me. I guess it was like a hot topic. And, you know, in just the same way as, you know, if I had a bereavement situation going on and someone else, one of my clients did, I wouldn't rush to say I've got something like that going on as well, because it's a hot topic. Yes. Whereas maybe 5-10 years later, I might say, oh, I lost such and such a person in similar circumstances, because if that seemed like that would be helpful to that person.
So you're thinking about somebody you might have worked with, not anybody in particular, but somebody you might have worked with, who wishes hearing this now that you'd been able to talk about it then.
That's exactly it. Uh-huh. That is it. Uh-huh. And feeling like, what if that person feels shortchanged or somehow like I was inauthentic or deliberately, you know, not sharing. And yet there was a really conscious, careful, professional process going on that where I was, you know, endeavouring to keep the focus on them and not to sort of blurge into the space with anything that would get too messy on my end, because I hadn't got it worked out yet, or worked out enough for me, because we're all different in these things. But mine was a slow process before I could be that, you know, be open in a non, what is the word? Like, to be open but not be really needy within it or something. Uh-huh. Or yeah, like, needy is the wrong word completely, but like,
well, you can talk
the stakes would be high for me. Yes, in what, yes, what would,
of course,
what would be spoken about. And
well, you yeah, need I need to know that my anything I disclose a lot, and certainly a lot more than I used to, but I also am very aware that I need to know that my clients aren't nervous for me. Do you know what I mean? That I can hold myself. Yeah. If I'm talking about something that might be painful or delicate, or
yes,
that they, yes, you know, what we don't want in that relationship,
yeah,
is in fact in for it to be equal in those terms, because it's not. We are it's one directional in that sense.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's really well summarized, actually, of the, yeah, the different elements to it. And you know, realizing now when I look back how much I still had of, you know, even internalized ableism, and, you know, even how that would attach to it, like you still have to appear in a certain way. And I hadn't really worked out, you know, or had the dialogues with the autistic therapist or any of that all these years ago to even know that it is different. Well, I suppose that's what I was talking about before in another episode, about, you know, realizing and coming into this way of being that can be so helpful for autistic to autistic communication. Yes. Yes. I didn't have that, and so there was still a big veto on sharing that I couldn't overcome at that time. Yeah, is that the right word? Is it veto or embargo? Or
prohibition, or to hold yourself
prohibition,
back.
Prohibition.
Yeah, exactly. That's right.
Yeah,
I know exactly what you mean. You know, it makes me think on a much larger scale, I suppose, that somebody somewhere, and fingers crossed, they have no idea who they are, was the first client I ever sat with.
And
best part of 10 years later, I'm sitting with another client who's getting a very different therapist. And I'm not going to say there's a qualitative difference, but there probably is. But that doesn't, you know, it's as long, what am I trying to say? We hope to be good enough all the time, from the beginning to the end. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's almost just torture to go back and think, oh, if only I'd have experienced this at that time, how useful to that person that would have been to have been a different therapist for them.
Yeah.
But we wouldn't expect that of anyone else, would we?
No. And it's the same, I guess. You know, you see a doctor and they know something, you know, that they didn't know 10 years ago.
Right.
Or and you get them as you get them.
Yeah.
And the way that you've put that, and, you know, extra training that we do that we didn't know whenever we had certain clients and things like that. I feel like, you know, it's also, there is a big part of it that's the development away from that stereotype of having to be prohibited, like you use that word, of really having to hold so much back. And I appreciate that, you know, there's styles of therapy and there's people that that works for. And I just feel like I was really hampered for so many years with that. And at the time frame that I'm talking about, of really coming into my autistic identity, and that coinciding with private practice for me as well, rather than agency practice, that there's so much freedom that how that has ended up becoming. That, and what I was trying so hard, but actually holding myself back when, when it maybe wasn't always beneficial to hold myself back, you know. So yes, I guess I'm making the point that maybe with the autism for me, I needed that, and that's completely valid. But in general, it's more of that theme that we talked about before of recognizing that, for especially when you're working when you're a divergence and you're a divergent yourself, you actually need some of that reality and disclosure.
Well, that's what you, as you said, you referred back to the other episode when you were talking about autistic to autistic communication.
I know.
And it's such, such a gift. That, but how could we have known until we knew? You don't know what you don't know.
You don't know what you don't know. Yeah. I feel like even this conversation and having this conversation go on and going spiraling round to the same kind of thing, but there being another level to it. Mm-hmm. Like I know maybe people would say that's everybody does that and that's therapy, but I feel like that's a particular way that my mind works, and it could be looked on as, oh, you know, you're down a rabbit hole, or you're going round in circles, or you're, you know, you're overthinking, you know, all these things get labeled as. And actually to be given the permission to have the time to go round and learn another little thing the next time that you go round, and then another little thing the next time you get round. Like, it's not actually purposeless. Mm-hmm. But I get how autistic people, how I and other autistic people can get labelled and cause or be accused of causing annoyance to non-autistic people for doing exactly what I'm doing. Yeah. And yet, you know, the last thing I want to do is be annoying. It's just I have to get this straight in my head.
That's so right. Also, therapeutically, you just reminded me, I may have told you this before, but you've just reminded me of one of the most kind of memorable interventions that I've ever experienced as a client in therapy. Uh-huh. Which was with my first therapist, and this is obviously pre-neurodivergence for me, knowing anything mm-hmm. about that, and she certainly wasn't. But I was talking about a troubling aspect of my life at the time, and I said something which so many clients have said to me since, which was, I keep talking about this. It's so boring. Here I go again. I'm talking about this again. Yeah. And what I said was, actually, I remember I said, I shouldn't talk about this so much. She said, well, in that case, you should talk about it more. Mm-hmm. It's very simple. There's nothing massively sophisticated about that thought. But that really, that's so important. If it keeps coming up, it's because it keeps coming up and it hasn't been processed. Yes. Or in this case, with you and I, it's not about processing. It's about coming to some kind of comfort with it. So you're talking, we are talking today about some of the perceived pitfalls about becoming more public with our voices as autistic therapists who have family, friends, colleagues, and lots of ex-clients and current clients too.
Yes.
We'll talk one day actually about nomenclature, the words that we use for things, actually, because I'm ever so interested in that. And I'm saying that because I just used the word clients a couple of times, and actually there are, I've done some kind of ad hoc research since I started practice, asking everybody that I've worked with what words they use in therapy.
Yeah, yeah.
I was surprised to find that it's only about half that prefer clients and the other half prefer patient.
It's
quite a big thing in the training that you don't use that kind of language because it can be pathologizing and clinical.
Yes.
But actually, there's something about how seriously you might feel taken if you're called a patient, and how actually maybe cold and businesslike it might sound to think of yourself as being thought of as a client. That's a side, but there's an ADHD sidebar to come back to one day. For the sake of our regular conversation, I think we tend to say client about the people we work with.
We do tend to say client, although I feel like people kind of fits a bit better for me. And I hear myself, you know, using that a bit more as well. And I'm influenced as well. So I'm on my second year of training with Bonnie Badenoch, and she does relational neuroscience. And one of her things is she just talks about my people and your people. And,
that's
you
lovely.
Know, in some ways it's, you know, it's a little bit, it's not quite right, but I've got used to it, I suppose, because she's talking about it. And at the end of the day, we are people working with people. And it's that whole, I'm human, you're human,
absolutely.
You know, when we're having a relationship.
I think if I'm talking more generally about my work outside work, then I think I do tend to say someone I'm working with.
Some
of the people that I work with. I tend not to use that language.
It's not clients,
client and patient and all of that. That's right. That's a nice thing to hold on to, maybe be more, for me to be more aware of, actually, because I like that.
Yeah. I don't know how to get us back.
Well, I was
from this.
You just did by saying that.
Yeah.
Because we are now, that just came straight out of talking about the fact that we're talking to many people in and out of our lives. And we're probably not thinking so much about those people we don't know, people who find us by searching for neurodivergence or autism or whatever in their podcast feeds. You're all very, very welcome. And I'd like to know more about you. So autisticlicense@gmail.com. But we are thinking about the people who are closer to us or have been.
Or have
and
been.
And what they'll make of this if they come across it or we tell them about it.
There is something about where I feel the need to speak to people who have an opinion of me or experience of me that might be really hard to square with what I'm like whenever I'm actually expressing myself. And just due to the heavy adaptation, I hate using the word masking all the time because it feels like it's a loaded term, and it's almost like it's conscious and it's practiced and it's planned.
Yeah.
And it never is that way. For me, it was a trauma response.
Yes.
And I had no clue that it was in operation. It was just an automatic thing.
Right.
And yet, the more that I become healed up and free within myself, and I learn and develop and grow as an actually autistic person, then that sort of organically lifts and I am different.
Yes.
And I guess it's knowing that there are some people that are maybe experiencing that without an explanation or it feels very sudden to them.
Yes.
And it might be very sudden, but also that there's still a lot of this that hasn't organically lifted in many spheres of life. Like, without choosing or not choosing, in a lot of public areas of life or maybe even interactions that I would have. It's just so habitual for me to fall into the way of being that I've got used to being outside of my home. And there's a kind of a wee bit self-conscious that because I might be able to express myself on here and also online, I'd say that the pandemic has kind of allowed me to meet and relate to a lot of new people, also autistic people. And because of the safety of those relationships, then right from the get-go, it has been easier to speak about myself from that starting point and share. There's also something around where the pandemic showed me the safety of home of being in my own space and not having to navigate going into social spaces with all of the sensory and overstimulation aspects of that. And so probably in my own spaces, I'm much more free for this just to happen and for me to talk and share. Mm-hmm. Whereas there's still a very real challenge of being out in the world when that's not always the case at all.
Isn't this whole idea of exposure and vulnerability, this is also dialed up, at least, if not peculiar to an autistic experience in this, in this kind of, you know. You will be more both aware and cautious of, especially when you sit, as we are now, talking to invisible people who cannot feed back to us live, we don't know how we're coming across. And so much of, or all of our lives so far, we've had a hypervigilance about how we're coming across. We've been monitoring it all the time, in real time, in useful ways and troubling and distressing ways. We can't do that right now. We don't know how many people we're talking to, and we don't know what they're making of us because we've got no cues because they're not here. And that must dial up. Sounds like it dials up for you, for sure. That idea of needing to be cautious and prepared and ready. Because you're not, you know, we normally can get a sense that we're not fitting in or we're not doing things in a neurotypical way, and therefore we might be othered or excluded in some way. But we don't have that feedback here. And I suppose for me, I have to kind of make peace with that, actually, and not care about it. Easier said than done.
Easier said than done. And might just be actually not, in this case, such a thing for you. And maybe I'm sort of embodying that aspect of the autistic experience, as you've just really amazingly, really fantastically described it there, that this is, you know, that's exactly what this is, Leo. You know, this is the autistic experience. And if I mean, obviously the masking that went on in those, all the years before, was an automatic thing. Like, it wasn't anything that I chose to put on. And that's what masking is. But we are looking here at how this is this is us unmasked, and it's only going to continue to be more and more unmasked the more that we lean into this. So that is the polar opposite than autistics who have spent their lives with a mask that they didn't even know they were wearing. So if I think about, you know, that that's how I would have been when these people knew me, and And I guess these people are important because there's really quite a lot of them. And it's not like it's all close friends, but it's the colleagues, it's the career people, because it's all of my adult life, because this is the only career that I had. You know, so it's as if, well, that was my take on, I believed that was who I was. They believed that was who I was, because no one knew there was a mask. And then to realize that actually now I have the opportunity to lean into who I am that's been covered up. And I'm, even though this is vulnerable, so much of me wants to do it because it's such an opportunity to do it. Like, you know, it's not, I'm not ambivalent about doing this. I'm just expressing it. Because it is so profound to come out and be self-expressive when you've spent so much of your life covering up and going under the radar and not being perceived and not being seen. And, you know, it's like the opposite to that. And I guess, you know, I guess there's a sense as well in which, for many people in our lives, and I'm not talking about anybody in particular or even colleagues, just anybody in our lives, it can be very, very convenient for people to have us in a masked way.
Good point. You know? That's an excellent, yeah, you're right, aren't you? Yes.
Yeah, that can be preferable.
I remember the very first day of psychotherapy training being told, you know, what this, a big chunk of this training isn't just about techniques and how to do the work, but also about changing yourself, because you have to, you know, mold yourself into a different version of you to do this work.
Really? And, they said that?
Yeah, especially when, you know, I'm relationally trained, and so it really is, it is all about how we form and model relationships too. And I just remember being told, and not everyone will like this. Not everyone will like the person that you change into. I know that divorce rates among people who train in the, it's more than 50%, I believe, or it was at the time. It's huge. So, because it's an identity change among many others for you and I think.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah, of course.
And the same is true now on a much wider scale, I suppose, through doing this. People, as you say, that's a really good point, actually. People will experience an unmasked version of us, and it may not be what they're used to. And I'm not presupposing whether it's better or worse, but it will be different.
Yes. It's like people coming into therapy that, you know, they will change and evolve through that, hopefully not by taking on anything or you know, but they will change. And if the other relationships and other people in their lives are not willing to accommodate the, you know, developed, evolved version of them, then that's an issue. So there is that. And I guess that applies to many, many, many people that we probably can't even think of, who will hear something and it's not attractive to them because they like us in a certain box and appearing to be a certain way.
I'm enjoying, for some reason, saying all of this out loud, bearing in mind some of those people. I don't know why, or I don't know what that means, but the idea of them hearing me say that out loud, that we'll hear, I suppose it's saying, well, this is actually a version of me that you might not know.
Yes.
I don't know what you'll make of that. I will share with the listeners that, you know, we had a conversation pre this recording about the launch of the podcast and how we're going to do that. And that you had some extra comfort around talking all of this through, as we have been doing today, and kind of and putting out a set of three podcasts where within each one we have been talking about the process of launching the podcast and what it means to us. And I'm wondering now, having actually done that out loud and more publicly, how you're feeling now? with regards to, so I mean, I think in this process, particularly over the last couple of weeks, my enthusiasm and energy has been quite up, which isn't necessarily typical of me in all things, but has been suddenly for this. And you have been balancing that really beautifully with some caution and some slower speed. This is not a qualitative comment on either of us, but that's a difference. And that's so. Do you feel that this conversation to unseen people that we talk to now is, it has been useful for your changed how you feel?
I can say that it's been useful to me. I can't say yet if it's changed how I feel. And that's another thing that I have come to appreciate about myself being autistic, where just don't know until something settles in me, and there will be some time. So I actually have been able to bring this in. I have a group of people that I was working with. It's actually ended now. We had a year and a half together, doing some IFS together. And, you know, often in a group, there's this kind of feedback at the end thing, and people can just say, how was that for them? And I've always struggled with that. So I took the risk of saying, like, I can't do that. But if you're willing, I will email you at some point over the next couple of days, and just whenever I felt like it. And I would send a group email and I would say, this is what came up. And I felt this whenever you said this, because I knew it. And it was really, really, really easy for me to do that, because the processing style of my brain is, that's how it works. So, like, I just don't know in the moment.
No.
But I will know.
Yes.
So,
Maybe the listeners will hear an extra little bit from you during the theme tune at the end.
They just might.
Where you feed back in a couple of days after this recording. And if they don't, we'll come back to it next time.
Good idea.
And as we've got this little set, I'm going to assume at the time of recording that this completes a little launch set of episodes, perhaps. And I'll edit this out if it doesn't. And this goes out. And so we are now really very much, I mean, we say at the end of every episode that we want feedback, and that anybody who wants to contribute ideas or would like us to talk about anything in particular to make contact. But particularly now then, because this feels like, okay, we've talked about what this has been like for us to start this podcast and this process and to be more exposed. What would you like us to do with it?
What would you like us to do with it? And how does it land with you? And can you share anything? Can you add anything? Can you resonate with anything? Like, we really want to know. I really want to know. You know, it's also just, it's funny, I just said M there. And, you know, over the last week or so, I've been listening to myself more than I've ever listened to myself, because Leo has been sending me the edits. And I keep hearing the ways in which I speak that, are maybe well known to people that talk to me all the time, but are not well known to me. And I feel this, like need to say that out loud, and yet not to do anything about it. So not to give Leo the task of edit out all the times that I say because you couldn't, Leo. But yet to actually say that's something that I have obviously developed to enable my processing and enable my speech. And it's, while if I was being trained to be a speaker, I'm sure that someone would try and teach me not to use those filler words. But actually, that's part of my autistic communication. That's part of my need take a space and yeah, you know, go to the next thing and the next thing. And that's really good learning to listen and leave. Mm-hmm. Just let it be.
Indeed.
Let it be. Yes.
Lovely song title to end on.
Yes. So, yeah, we're ending for
I think
today.
So. Yeah. Is that all right?
Just like,
are we done?
Are we done? Yes, we're done. Thank you for listening to the Autistic License podcast. We're very open to feedback and suggestions for future topics. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook at autisticlicense.com or email autisticlicense@gmail.com. If you're interested in therapy with an autistic counsellor, you can visit thrivingautistic.org.